Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fill My Eyes with, and Company with Poetry. I want to say that backwards. So, anyway, I hope everyone had a great week, and I hope you have a better weekend to follow. As always, that's what I say. It's been a hot one this week. And I think it's supposed to be just as hot all next week, so I hope everyone is staying hydrated and cool. So that's all I'm going to say. That's my public service announcement for the night. Hope everyone's well. Hello, Rex, and how are you tonight?
I'm all right. What's doing?
Oh, you know, not much. You know, same old, same old. I got cucumber flowers on my cucumbers. I know, big deal, right? But I'm selling.
That is a big deal.
Yeah, I got like 4 or 5 of them. Pretty good. You know, now the thing is, will I get anything bigger than a gherkin before I kill it? That's the question. But it's hard because I didn't plant them in the ground. So they're stuck from me watering them. And God help them. That's all I got to say. I've got to put that up there when I put my audios in. You know what I mean? Make it part of this process. Oh, my goodness. So anyway, let's see. What else is new with you? You got hot weather this week?
Yep, it was steamy all week, and we just had a big blowout rainstorm, which has
hey,
lifted the place
with you guys. We've been running like 93 for a whole week. How do you get 80?
No. We've been hit the 90s. It's just that this afternoon we had a big blowout rainstorm.
Yeah, yeah. It always helps.
Just flying everywhere.
Even that didn't make it more humid. Yeah. I think you said
actually,
you were
no, it cooled it off quite a bit.
Yeah, that's always good when that happens. But,
it's actually quite reasonable right now.
Nice. Very nice. I don't know what it is outside right now. I'm sitting in my room with the door shut and the air conditioner on. So it feels wonderful to be right this moment. But things are apt to change, right? Oh, my goodness. So, okay, listen, we got Laurent on the line. So, hello, Laurent. Welcome to the party. I don't know if it's quite a
pleasure. Thank
yet,
you. Pleasure to be here. Hello, everyone. Hey, Rex. How are you doing?
Good. How about you?
Not too bad. Humid as hell, but not too bad.
Oh, okay.
Oh. We got Victoria's in the room. And Parko's in the room. Oh, my goodness. Nice little crowd out there. Hello, everybody. I'm waving. I know you can't see me, but I'm waving anyway. Wait, I can do this. Okay. Yeah, I'm waving now. It's official. So anyway, what else is going on, fellas? Ryan, what's your weather like? What's your temperature been all week? I know I've been in the 90s. You've probably been
80s and 90s mostly, yeah. Heavy humidity, rain all the time, a couple of sunny days here and there, but, you know, it's not, it's an odd summer. It's an El Nino summer.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the darn humidity has murder. You open up the front door, so a couple of days this week, I opened up the front door and I felt like I'd stepped into an aquarium. And it was just yuck. Very, very dark. But, you know, just two shall pass, I say. Two shall pass. So, yeah. We had a big board of poetry tonight. Did anybody notice?
Yes, I did.
Yep.
Yes. Yes, we got a big board. And I'm kind of looking forward to it. There's some good names up there. Carryovers, all that stuff. We have most of our carryovers actually have audio still in them. So they're going to be all up front. Then we're just going to be reading. So, yeah. That's what I said around. I said, oh, Lord. And I guess I'll be reading all the girly parts. Just saying. It's okay. We're good. If anything gets too dangerous, I'll move it to the bottom and pray that Luke calls in or something. That worked out well last week. Anyway, I guess we should get it all started. And they don't want to hear me yammer on, so let's see what I got. The first one I have here is, well, by Darkened Auras, so I guess I'll read first. Those are good. Not a problem. Let's see what I got. This is called Living the Life by Darkened Auras. Made a hole on my wall, a portal going in so far, along an empty hall. I mustered up my courage to step in and explore. The silence, it was definite, and for the door. I tried to push it open, but it seemed to be stuck fast. I pushed all my weight against it. There's no way it could land. Finally, I broke open. And I fell in, looked open to see myself, and the mirror of my own bedroom, though this one looked as well. Fancy gold-plated bedposts, fluffy sheets, was so clear. Had I taken opportunities in life, I may well be here. I turned back to see the door gone. The other me had darted quick. Back through the tunnel, I had come. Didn't realize it was a trick. I started living his life. He started living mine. He started drinking soda pops while I sipped on fine wine. But I began to understand the thing I could never see. Because I never had much money, I lived life pretty free. I had friends that had my back, knowing they would not be paid. I didn't have to buy my partner material things to get me laid. He has fake happiness, fake love, When he runs out of money, that's when darkness descends. And so, sorry about that.
Great reading.
Yeah.
Great reading. Thank you very much. And Laurent, let's start with you. What'd you think?
Well, as usual, he's given us a fine poem, and it's a great storyline. I like the premise, you know, Trading Places. It's been a good movie or two and a good book or two, I'm sure. But it's a fine example of what happens. You know, you got people at both ends of the spectrum, one poor, one wealthy. In this case, they trade places, and a life that he used to live, pretty free, as he says, and with friends who didn't expect to get paid, and he didn't need money to get laid. But that last line is so telling. You know, when darkness descends, where is it? When he runs out of money, that's when darkness descends. Hangers on are a strange group. As long as you can absorb them into your circle, and as long as you keep them in cigarettes and booze and drugs or whatever, they're your friends. And the moment it all runs out, that's when darkness descends. I like his formal stanza approach, but with exceptionally long lines, which I think works well for the story. He rhymes well. He has an interesting twist in the piece. I like the way he introduced it. Great piece all the way around.
Nice. Thank you very much, Rob. And Jean, you got to read it. How about you?
You know, I thought it was a great piece. It kind of reminded me of the Prince and the Pauper a little bit, you know, on that line.
Oh, yeah.
But it was taken for an quote. Here I opened wide the door, darkness there and nothing more. And I thought it was a great take on that. And I, you know, I said anyway when I spoke earlier, and, you know, sorry about that. I, for some reason, had A.R. Mundell, her name in my head when I read this. So I apologize for that. This piece was by Dark and R. So I wanted to make sure I mentioned that. When I ended confused. But, it was just a nicely done piece. I thought the tale was well told. I thought there was good imagery in it. And I thought it was a great take on that prompt. So nice work, and thank you so much, Christine, for sharing with us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, you're right. Trading Places, Dan Aykroyd, Eddie Murphy, and Freaky Friday,
yep,
Jamie Lee Curtis.
There you go.
And I like the fact that she went with the Poe thought, with the layout, and offering up those long lines and the rhyme scheme to roll with it. And that opening stanza was nicely laid out. The oil tar-like goop made a hole upon my wall. A portal going on so far along an empty hall. I mustered up my courage to step in and explore. The silence, it was deafening at the end where stood a door. That's a nice opening stanza. Kind of gives you a creepy note to what's going on. And then the layout, which kind of offers up a nice transition into moving into something else, then watching the trader go into yours and realizing, hey, best be careful what you wish for, the moral of the story goes, because at the back end of this, reality sparks that the darkness which descends, because now you're living something which you know nothing of and you weren't prepared for, and you realize, hey, I had it better on the other side. Now I'm stuck. So, well done, Dark, and thank you very much. All right, Jane, they're coming up back to you.
My reading space. Okay. I'll tell you what. The next one I have to put up is by Selena. And this one has an audio. We have Pamela on. So, hello, Pam. Welcome to the party.
Hello. Well, you know, I wasn't going to call in, but, you know, I was looking in the studio and I thought, oh, geez, I can't leave Jean alone with those two good-looking men all by herself. Somebody has to help that poor woman. So, you know,
I think you got chased because Parker's out there grabbing the torches and pitchforks, rabbling up the rousers.
Did you see what I said to you, Gene? When you brought up the Latin last poem and you said it reminded you of the Prince and the Pauper by Mark Twain. And I had that exact same thought. So I said, dang it, Gene, you stole my thought. And Harco, of course, is getting everyone riled up. Grab the torch. Grab the pitchfork. But no, I did. I had the exact same thought. It was like almost like a darker, more twisted, and almost a science fiction-like version of the Prince and the Pauper. So I did think that was really cool that we saw it on the same level.
Yeah, it had that similarity
one too. So it's pretty good. Or a nice cunning look behind that picture of Dorian Gray.
Oh, there you go.
Parker's out there being crazy. Anyway. Okay, so I'm going to hit the damn button, Bill. He says the other. He's got the number dialed. He's trying to make himself hit the call button. He's not on the board, so I had to tell him. Okay, so here we go. Next piece I'm going to put up is called Sweet Green South Carolina Eyes by Stelena. And this one has an audio. So let me go and hit the button.
Skinny dipping in those sweet green South Carolina eyes and feel their gaze graze over my skin, evoking shivering sighs whilst caressing my quivering thighs, heart humming soulfully with melodious murmurs and quickening beat, flipping the on-switch of my senses, deliciously thrumming from head to feet. With expertise, he's turning up the heat. Waiting to be succulently sipped like earthy wine, swirled around the mouth, tongue tasting each burst of flavor, slowly savored by this honey from the south, whose touch takes the words right out of my mouth. Hesitating, unsure of his intention, but those neon lights say green for go, down whichever path I want to take him. Psychedelic heavenly hues he's gonna show as his pulsating passion begins to grow. So I'm testing the waters, honey lamb. Let me swim in your deep green sea with your tempestuous waves of undulation, washing wildly and wantonly over me. As with your rhythmic response, you set me free.
Wow.
wonderful reads, Selena. Thank you very much for the sound tab. We appreciate it. All right, Gene, we're going to start with you. You got it. You mean take it.
I thought this was a great piece by Selena. It was, I said it was nice, in quote, and warm, in quote. But she, you know, she's got a way of writing. I'll tell you, she knows just how to say it. Must see. I loved how she started this. I want to go skinny dipping in the sweet green South Carolina eyes and feel their gaze graze over my skin, evoking shivering sighs while caressing my quivering thighs. You know, I mean, well, there's no better place to start than there, I guess. I thought she did a great job. And each stanza in itself is really well done. And she just, I say paints a really good picture, but she more or less like makes a movie. So well done, Selena, and thanks for sharing with us. Love the audio.
Thank you, Gene. And Laurent, how about you?
Who can dislike a poem like this? Waiting to be succulently sipped like earthy wine, swirled round the mouth, tongue tastes in each burst of flavor, locally savored by his honey from the south, whose touch takes the words right out of my mouth. Very inventive rhyming. Nice flow to this. Passionate. Almost erotic. Bite and a voice that draws in even as the green eyes draw her in. She's done it again, giving us a very nice piece filled with the inventiveness and the quality of her writing. Nothing to dislike it.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. Pam, what about you?
Oh, I like this. As always, she does a top-notch recording. Love the saxophone music in the background. She actually wrote this for one of my Art of Seduction contests with the song lyrics from Neon Lights by Demi Lamour. Not Demi Lamour, sorry, Demi Lovato. Jeez, I'm I know.
Ah, yeah.
But, I did give this one the silver, and it's one of those that's worth hearing again. Because she took and did the prompt in such a, like, a inspiration. You could see the inspiration in the prompt, from the prompt in her write, but she had her own voice to it. And my main comment was, ooh la la, an amazing seductive write on diving right in. You know, and it really just, I like how she expresses the desire to just dive right in to that, those feelings of lust. I really particularly like this, you know, the suspense that's built up within the end couple last stanzas, and especially with, so I'm testing the waters, honey lamb, let me swim in your deep green sea with your tempestuous waves of undulation. Wonderful rhyme and imagery and very well done.
Well said. Thank you very much, Pam. I think Georgia, I think the blush is worn off your peach. Sounds like the myrtles are in need of a little caressing. I too like the background music with this. I heard that saxophone come in. And said, oh, where's this one going? And Selena doesn't fail to deliver. She does that nice little touch of a southern accent, too, to play off the thought flowing in this. And she does deliver a heated piece. And you did. I did see that you gave us silver for this one. So nicely done, Selena. Well thought, well composed, and as you went skinny dipping in green eyes. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, we're coming back your way.
Oh, let's skip around a little bit here. Not far, though. I'm actually going to ask you to read this next one by Joseph Moon. It's called Where Light Goes to Die.
Okay. Damn, you're actually getting a shorty. Ooh. Where Light Goes to Die by Joseph Moon.
is.
The night bright and gentle, not a breath of breeze. Twilight moon sedately hangs o'er a sapphire sea. Beyond the cosmos and stars, far from mortals and Mars, but I desire much more. As I dream on moonlit shore, up towards paradise I gaze, where in sweet love spends her days, her eyes. Once the brightest constellation of my skies, like them that are no more alive. And poem. All right, Cam, we're going to kick it with you first.
Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. You know that Jean probably gave you a shorty because she has planned for you to read a 500 poem or a 500 word poem later, like in about 15 minutes. But anyway, this is, yeah, right. This is beautiful. Oh my goodness. You know, Joseph Moon, I love when he shares something with us because his poetry always has such a classic feel to it. And I really like how this speaks on the idea of, you know, looking up at that night sky with all the stars, the planets, the moon, and just wondering what it's all about. You know, I think there's really no moment in life that makes you feel more like philosophizing than staring up at a clear night sky sparkling with stars. I really particularly like beyond the cosmos and stars, far from mortals and Mars, but I desire much more as I dream on moonlit shore up towards paradise I gaze. I like the comparison where he says, where in sweet love spends her days. I like that comparison of love to being so much more. And the idea of, it makes me think of someone looking up at heaven, you know, and wishing they could be with their beloved who passed away. It's really a beautiful and emotive piece and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Cam. And Laurent, how about you?
Where Light Goes to Die is a great title. Begins the night bright and gentle, not a breath of breeze. Twilight moon sedately hangs over sapphire seas. Right off the bat, he offers a very balanced text with nice rhymes. Beyond the cosmos and stars, far from mortals and Mars, are two more lines that rhyme very well and give us and bring us a very poetic image. But the desire is for much more. So he gazes towards paradise and speaks about her eyes, once the brightest constellation of my skies, like them that are no more alive. I'm not sure that he's talking about stars representing people who have died, or whether it's something different. I'm entirely sure there, but it's a powerful line. I'll wait to see what it means exactly. Well done.
Nice. Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I thought it was beautifully written, and I thought the emotions were well expressed. And I thought there was lovely imagery. So thank you so much, Joseph, for sharing with us. But before I kick it back to you, Rex, just so you know, we have Bill Borden on the line. And we have Victoria Phillips. So hello. Welcome aboard, everybody. Thanks.
Hello, everyone.
How you doing, Bill?
Well, hanging in there, or trying to anyway.
Hello, Bill. Well, pleasure to hear you.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
There you go.
Excellent. you were saying, Gene?
Probably went on mute.
Well, anyway, Bill, did you get to hear that last piece?
I was kind of in the middle of it. I'm kind of glancing over as we're talking here. I really like the closing of that one. Once the brightest constellation of my skies, like them that are no more alive. There's really a lot of motion there.
You're right. There is. That does kind of imply a death note. But I do like that he dropped a note in his AN lamenting at the sky. So he kind of walked that off with a number of thoughts. The end of another day, so to speak. The thoughts of that which has gone on that day. Maybe it was a hard day. The idea of looking towards the stars offers up hope for a better day, a better week, a better month, better year, and that which comes with it. So nicely done.
Absolutely.
Joseph, and thank you very, very much. We're coming back to you, Gene.
Rex, did you miss that I snuck on here?
Oh, no, I didn't.
You didn't. You didn't. I
didn't know you were here.
Phil said I was here. That's okay. Do you mind if I steal a comment really quickly, though?
Absolutely.
I love it. So one of the things, this poem actually reminds me of a few things, and I apologize. My long-winded comments are back-ish. But what this verse reminds me of is that there used to be this image that came across on social media that showed nebulas and the iris of the eye. What was really cool about it is that if you looked at some of these nebulas as compared to the cornea of the eye, they were almost, they look similar. So you could see that there are some nebulas that are these beautiful shades of brown, and we have people who have eyes that have these beautiful shades of brown. But your iris is unique to you. Nobody has that same pattern. And so this first reminded me of that, the way that the color of the eye could almost be like that nebula that you look up in the sky, and you'll never see it again. You'll never see the same sky again. The clouds will never be in quite that way. The weather will never be in quite the same way as you saw it at 6:05 on Tuesday, November 22nd. You know, you will never see the same sky again. You'll never stand in that same position to see that same angle. So it reminded me of that. It reminded me of the uniqueness and yet the vastness and the grandiose and the beauty that comes with gazing into another person's eyes. It also reminded me in a strange way that we forget that in this large world that people have filled each space. We have forgotten that humans continue to multiply and rabbits continue to multiply and ants continue to multiply. And very, very few times, especially animals which don't have conscious thought, very few times is there a thought of, you know, hey, maybe we're overpopulating something. And so I recently was listening to his name is Hank Green. He's a scientist on various social medias. And he was talking about aliens and how it's an interesting sign that we haven't met any aliens yet, depending on what you believe. Because if nature is to consume all things and fill all things, then aliens would be infiltrating us and would be overpopulating the earth. And so the fact that we don't see that gives us the idea that either there is none or they've perhaps even learned to be at peace and happy with where they are. But it reminds us that as we look into those night skies and we look into that beauty, that there is also this sort of isolation of us in this grandness that someone else somewhere is looking at the night sky with Earth in it. It's a reminder that life can be so incredibly, incredibly isolating, and yet you can have some of the deepest connections formed with people that you never knew. I think of my husband. I met him on chance, serendipitously I met him. And yet a complete stranger became the person who knows me the best and the deepest and loves me the most. And so this reminds me of that. This reminds me of the way that we can connect, but also a reminder of how small we are and how serendipitous life truly is in the greatness of space.
Hi. Haven't heard your voice in quite a while, Vic. Where you been hiding?
Life has not been kind as of late. So making my way back, but we're doing okay. We're getting things settled and figuring out this new chapter of life.
Oh, cool. Well, good to hear you again. Welcome. Oh,
absolutely.
All right, Jean, where would you like to go?
Well, the next one I'm going to put up is by Titus Llewellyn, and it's called Persuasion and Their Multitude. And I have an audio for that.
Persuasion in their multitudes, dubium, love's enchantment, it stirs another tale, an amber moonlight shines, a mood for two, I grimly sit, unwittingly prevail, thou dearest, near and far, unearthly few, 'tis deemed in retrospect to have unnamed the stars, so near yet far away be brought to death, to be the dark briquette unclaimed, whose rhetoric it was Lucretius thought. It holds in name alone to reach new heights, to which we can be named it will cover closely, shown between the stars so light, imagines the find of one or the other, a proposition whereby each colludes, another world exists, with we forgot to count ourselves among the multitude, so faint a star you taint the theory lets. Color-coded are your timelines, a thread which so and so the fabric of your soul bewilderment. Love's splendor will embed the soul environment, all stars will scroll. Love's demeanor is nothing otherwise, drawn are constellations, the collusions outwardly speaking shall open our eyes to engage upon the many disillusions. We are free to come and go as we please, memory sees it to it that here on this earth the appearance of whatever may ease anxiety or be it our lasting gear.
Great, Titus. Thank you very much for the sound time. It is much appreciated. And since we have six people in the room and quite a bit of poems to go through, we're going to split this up in threes. We'll do three comments each, and we'll rotate off. Victoria, since just kind of sit on what you just finished off with the last poem, why don't you start with this one?
I would absolutely love to. So you're absolutely right. This reminded me again with that cosmic theme and the way in which we ebb and flow through it. They actually, again, more science, because my family's scientists. I'm not. I'm just an accountant. But dad's a medical doctor, sister's a veterinarian, and brother's a chemical engineer. Science. So I get a lot of science. They just created, and my husband also is an astro scientist. Anyways, astro engineer. Anyways, they just built a satellite that looks for the ebbs and flows of time within space by looking at faraway stars. I forget the specific type of star, but it kind of pulsates two rods of light through it. And what they're able to do is that this telescope satellite thing, not my forte, it looks for when those lights disappear, and they're able to actually see time warping within space. And so the way that they were kind of describing it as they were talking about it was that really the Earth isn't sitting still in space. It is much like a sea on an ocean, and we know when a wave has come up or that something has warped time and light because those stars will fade. I think they're quasars, that's what it is. So the quasar will fade. They won't be able to see it, and then it'll come back. And it's much like a boat going beneath or to the base of a wave and then coming back up. This reminded me of that. This reminded me of nature and the way that there are ebbs and flows, not just in our life, not just in love, not just in the way that we connect with people, but also in the way that nature works. And I love that he said Lucretius thought, because that was a Roman poet and philosopher who often thought on the being one with nature or the nature of the universe. And so it fits in beautifully with the way that with the way that this plays with the cosmos of it, because it's a reminder that in many ways we are all connected, that life will ebb and flow, that love will ebb and flow. It's not, we don't always love the person that we're with. Like sometimes it's a choice and it sucks. But there's always that ebb and flow. Sometimes you're overwhelmed by it and sometimes you're wringing their neck. But that's the nature of life. And I loved his recital of this because it has that almost lyrical ebb and flow to it. And so you're kind of just drifting along with these deep undercurrents of thought that just kind of pull you in, want you to dive deeper and perhaps even become lost in it. But his work is always stellar, and this was a fantastic, fantastic piece.
Nice. Thank you, Vic. I've heard about that that new machine, and that's because we still haven't answered that grand enigma of gravity is really and how it affects everything. So, Laurent, how about you?
Sorry, I had to get off mute. I like Victoria's comment immensely. She has a habit of piercing the haze, so to speak, and pulling out little gems of comment that open up the poem to me even more than my own reading. The stanza that I like, for some reason, a proposition whereby each concludes another would exist had we forgot to count ourselves among the multitudes, so faint a star you take, the theory is not. The combination of physical sciences and poetry is always a lot of fun, especially when it's handled by Titus, whose writing is beyond reproach. And I see that he uses the word bewilderment. That's an interesting word, and I'm sure Gene will agree with me. Great piece, great poem.
Nice. Thank you, Alon. And Pam, how about you?
Did she step away again?
No, she dropped.
Okay. Bill, why don't you add to the sheet, please?
Well, I thought it had a really, really great flow to it, and the emotions that are drawn out in the second to the last stanza, love's demeanor is nothing otherwise. Drawn our constellations, the collusions, outwardly speaking, shall open our eyes to engage upon many disillusions. That really says a lot there. And I like how he wrote, laid it all out.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Bill. All right, Gene, we're coming to you.
Okie dokie. Well, that was a wonderful piece by Titus, as always, and I enjoyed it. I left a written comment. So the next piece I'm going to put up, Laurent, I'm going to ask you to read, and this is called O Act One by Vic Bailey. So whenever you're ready.
All right. Yeah. All right. O Act One, Luke J.R. Eyes fixated on the fluorescent fan, spinning, endlessly erratic. Eyes fixated on the fanning, clock frozen to the mind, comprehending, glass half full, rain droplets, escaped breathing. Fixated on a figurine, spinning, leaping, and steady with temptation to pull it. Sudden screeching, eyes solidified, fixated on the friction within the mind, long-lasting leaving, time passing, liquefied tears, petrified smiling, lingering lining, mummified crying, electrified, buzz, buzz, buzz. Flashes, friction, fairy tale fiction, pasture parting, people partying, mask masqueraded, metrics motto, sudden lotto, lotto, lottery lighting, temptation pencil down, temptation pencil down, electrified, buzz, buzz. Eyes fixated on the stained stairway, endlessly erratic. Eyes fixated on staining, clock frozen to the mind, draining, glass empty, rain droplets, handprints, redness within cracking. Fixated on several figurines, instigated, and steady with temptation, the pulling, buzz, and toil.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Gene, we're going to start with you.
You know, I thought this is another great piece by Luke Dayar. Okay, making sure I can be heard. his use of alliteration throughout is really pretty incredible. His great imagery, but the way it's worded, you know, he's kind of just drawn into it all. And I think that it doesn't appear, of course, I'd be tripping all over it, but Laurent read it well without stumbling. And I think it was just well done. Thank you, Luke, for sharing with us, as always. Great piece.
Thank you, Jean.
I could do that part.
Did Pam come back, or is it just us?
No. No, I don't quite know where she went. I think she just figured there's enough of us. No.
Okay, cool.
I chased her away.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Came back,
well,
she was like, nope, not here for it.
Oh, I like this for the that opening stanza. It seems kind of chaotic, but the funny thing is, it gives me a hint of a little bit of Bukowski with the intensity drawing on the fluorescent fan spinning, the erratic eyes fixated on the fanning. But also the thought with a clock frozen to the mind comprehending has me thinking of Dolly as well. So I like the interpretive thought of walking through that notion of Dolly's mind and Bukowski's thoughts being operated in that same mental configuration. The buzz has me hitting with the idea of the connection between the neurons firing across the brain. So it's a matter of everything being played out in the mind, and then that sort of a temptation penciled down, electrified buzz, letting it build to the point where, all right, now I've got what I need, and put it to paper. So I like that thought. And then the finish out with the eyes fixated on the same stairway kind of hits on the dinginess of the moment, and maybe going back into and seeing a little bit more before one gets back into it again. And Victoria, how about you?
I am so thankful that you called on me for this. So this, to me, it really to me drove me into those really mundane moments in life where nothing spectacular is going on and you're just kind of caught up with something that's mundane. And so the buzzing actually reminded me, at my parents' house, it drives me crazy. We built the house back when I was a child. So it's old, not terribly old, but it's old enough that some of the lights buzz. And they're in the kitchen, if you turn up the dial too much, because there are those lights that kind of dim and brighten as you turn up the dial. If you turn it up too much, the buzzing comes. And the buzzing actually reminded me of that. And it reminded me of being kind of drawn into one of those pensive moments where you're just sitting there and you're not really thinking anything, but you're thinking everything. And again, nothing is going on. You could just be sitting in a chair, looking at a fluorescent light, listening to that buzz, letting your mind wander about life. Sometimes we want poetry to be so incredibly deep and have these hidden, twisted meaning messages, whereas this to me actually reminds me of those fluid thoughts. And maybe even there's a hint of darkness in this. You know, I see it's tagged with like mental health, for example. And so part of me wonders if like the buzz, it seems almost like a countdown. And it kind of ends with that temptation. It even says, hand steady with temptation to pull, buzz. And so it makes me almost wonder if those are those moments where we're kind of like, how did I get here? My husband and I play Magic the Gathering. You can judge me as you see fit. But the couples that play together stay together. And so we play Magic the Gathering. And the one that just came out is Lord of the Rings based. And they literally made one ring that had a bounty of over 2 million euros on it. And we're collecting them because we collect them. But there was a genuine conversation that he and I had where he goes, you know, I want to go and get all these things so that we can try and get that one ring. You know, we've got a better chance of it than winning the lottery. And I just looked at him. I was like, we're not that lucky. You know, it's fun, but we're not that lucky. And so this kind of reminds me of that, those moments where you're kind of just contemplating life. You're contemplating all those moments where something could have been done differently and you wonder if your life would have been different. And life is not spectacular. It's just mundane. And we're caught within that buzz. And perhaps even those calls from the void start linking in and making us wonder what happens if we just let the buzz enter our bones and do as it will. So to me, this is kind of a a deeply pensive, almost dark, fluid thought that plays with the idea of unaliving yourself with that countdown of temptation. So it's an interesting rite. It's a dark rite, but it's fascinating in the way it was done.
Nice. Thank you, Victoria. And back to you, Jean.
Okay, the next piece I'm going to put up is by Arcana Amor, and I have an audio for that. It's called In a House of Pain. So here we go.
She watched me fall from scarlet skies, drowning in the purgatory of her embrace. Night was her plaything of eternal torture, poured from lost memories of dead desires. Her lips inject poison with venomous smiles, haunting my silence with deafening disdain, tearing down walls of a crumbling heaven, cold glass eyes, pierced sinking serenity, drowned in contempt by liquid languor, spewing razor words on a twisted tongue, in walls that rage inside imagination, to scar her world with fallen fantasies. In lands of regret that speak in secrets, hidden behind veils of fractured disguise. Her love ebbed away in melting moments that softly cascaded on forgotten fields to nurture reality's crippled delusions. As empathy fades across an empty horizon, closeness slept on a lonely pillow, delivering dreams to weeping rainbows, seeking solace inside bottled tornadoes. Passion begged please to smear her lips among forlorn fits of needful notions, craving comfort from shattered shadows. Now, all that's left is the dust of despair that blows bereft in a winter wilderness. Echoes of reason drift distant whispers of bleeding wounds from sad temptations, endlessly enduring a deluge of derision, dwelling with sorrow in a house of pain.
Wonderful SoundCloud there, Arcana. Thank you very much. We truly appreciate it. And Bill, why don't you lead us off? What'd you think?
Well, as usual, Arcana never ceases to amaze. It really reminded me of a dark version of the movie The Notebook. Oh, the two lovers are there together, and then they end up dwelling in the house of pain or even death at that moment. I'm almost speechless. It was a great read and a great write by Arcana.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Bill. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, in Arcana and Selena, for that matter, we've got folks who rhyme with the best of them. And we're always urged, you know, don't rhyme. You'll just chase the rhyme and forget the poem. It's got to be the poem. It's important. But when you have a subject matter that's handled as brilliantly as this is, the writing as good as it is, and you can rhyme, well, now we're getting into what anybody's going to call pure poetry. And that's what it is. The House of Pain, boy, what a place this is. His metaphors, his similes, his descriptive imagination. It's at a fever pitch, a piece almost, spewing razor words on a twisted tongue in wars that rage inside imagination. The star of the world with fallen fantasies. I wonder about her. She, her lips inject poison with a venomous smile. Is she a vampire by any chance? Night was her plaything of eternal torture. So that fits, but I don't know. Maybe a vampire is a little bit of a stretch. Although poured from lost memories of dead desires, I don't know. It could be. Either way, superbly done.
Absolutely. Arcana chooses the right music to kind of exemplify his voice. You get that nice note to ethereal movie-type atmosphere, digs in well through the author's up. The voice itself kind of walks within a Poe-like story, telling the woeful tale of what this guy is going through at the hands of this person. And it's nicely kind of creepy, and it kind of digs under your skin in the moment because of the music and the voice itself, especially with the nice touch with the echoes slightly going in the background. So well done, Arcana. And Gene, we're coming to you. But you got to unmute me first.
Dang it. I think this is a wonderful piece by Arcana. And, you know, well done as always. Sadly, darkly sad, sadly dark, whichever way you want to look at it. It was dark, right? And there was a sad basis to it. And I really enjoyed the two stanzas, Close and Slept on a Lonely Pillow. That one and the one after it, I thought it was just it was very well penned and, as always, well presented. So thank you, Arcana, for sharing with us. I really appreciate it. Excellent. Okay. And Rex, I don't know if you saw Victoria Hadjoli. So right.
Yes, I did. I just saw that.
Okay, you can give me Lauren. Bill. Hi, Bill. Crazy quiet.
Hello.
He's so well behaved. I can't say it. Hey, a little Rammy Ranch here someday. Let me see now. I'm going to ask you to read the next piece, Bill. And this one is by the Debasis Verma from India. I don't know. That's my best take on it. So, if you would be so kind.
Give me just one moment and get it up here. Mm-hmm. And I'll do my best.
Never ask.
Om Shanti, Om Shanti. Can you hear all the disordered noise of the disturbed era? Can you hear the subdued echoes of suppressed crying? Can you hear the crackling sound of crumbling moors? Can you hear the echo of pathos crossing over that meadow? Can you hear a single word or moan flipped out from a weak widow? Can you hear the whine of a wounded joint? Behold, a battalion of soldiers standing with man-made arms. In the backdrop of grayish silver clouds, so quiet and firm, they will create erosion in this fertile land and throw up poison spoiling the golden sand. The crops will dry up. The trees will be burnt up. Can you recognize them? Who will malign the glory of creation? Who is ready to bring destruction, create a place of prolonged desperation? Who will kill the innocent crossing, the barbed barrier? Hold on. Oh, you the great, you the warrior, you the mighty fighter. Whom are you going to kill? Whom will you make deserted? Will you remove to become the emperor, gathering victory from the dust and horror? Oh, shoot, lost my place. That will set again an example of annihilation of acuity and humanity? Hear me if you have time. Give an honest try. Hear me over all irate outcries. Hear me over your pride and prejudices. Hear your might to bring floods of happiness, not light. Carry loads of love in your fighter flight. Oodles of jubilation and cheer, which is long out of sight. No more war. No more devastation. No more separation. No more starvation. Oh, my dear, let us pledge and slog intently for that very day when all hands will unite for peace and not for a fray, and embed the sapling of trust at every bay. End poem.
Great read, Bill. Thank you very much. And this was from last week's Buffalo Springfield show last Sunday. And I believe Debauchess did it to, for what it's worth, a wonderful song from back in the 60s by Buffalo Springfield. And Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, I like poems like this, and I wish I knew what the literary technique is, the asking of questions followed by the answers. It's not quite a call and response, but it almost has that same feel. Can you all hear the disordered noise of the disturbed era? What a novel way of talking about some of the crap that we're all dealing with in these last few years, ever since COVID and then afterwards. Can you hear the subdued echoes of suppressed crying? Can you hear the crackling sound of crumbling mores? Can you hear the echo of pathos crossing over that meadow? Can you hear a single word or moan slipped out from the weak widow? Can you hear the whine of a wounded joint? And then he begins that second stanza with, behold, the battalion of soldiers standing with man-made arms. And he just moves on to a series of images of the world that are pretty terrifying, really a forecast for the type of thing that's going on weather-wise in our world. In the backdrop of grayish silver clouds, so quiet and firm, they will create erosion in this fertile land and throw up poison spoiling the golden sand. You know, too much rain, oil wells, and the heat and the weather, drying the crops, burning the trees. Can you recognize them who will malign the glory of creation? The very people who are causing all this tragedy, this travesty of life. Remarkable piece, I thought. It was gripping from top to bottom.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
I thought this was a nicely penned piece and a good take on the prompt. I assume, you know, if you put one of the prompts from last week, it fit well based on what I heard last week. Let me put it that way. I thought his thoughts were well expressed, and I want to thank him for sharing with us all tonight. It was well done. And, Bill, that was a great read. I know it's your first time reading for us, and I want to make sure I did tell you you did a fine job. So thank you for that.
Well, you have a good voice for reading.
And, Bill, you got to read it. You got an authoritative?
Well, everything I thought I was going to say was already said.
That happens sometimes.
I have to be honest. I don't know what else to say. I mean, Laurent.
Being honest, that's good.
I don't know where to go from there.
Usually when I get like that, I say, yeah, what he said. You know? I'm just kidding. I have done that. No.
Yeah, it was. I do like the questions posed in this deck because of the horror that it is exemplified. The back end of this, though, hear me if you have time. Give an honest try. Hear me over all your irate outside. Hear me over your pride and prejudices. Steal your might to bring floods of happiness, not blight. Carry loads of love in your fight or flight. Oodles of jubilation and cheer, which is long out of sight. No more war, no more devastation, no more separation, no more starvation. Oh, my dear, let us pledge and slog intently for that very day. Great thoughts to finish out the piece, too. Thank you, Deborah Seeks. Much appreciated. And, Jean, we're coming to you.
Okie doke. Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is by Sapphire Rose, and it's called Coalesce. And I have an audio for that.
Coalesce. We exist collectively in the realm of every heartbeat, in the color of the meeting of eyes, in the silence of twilight. We are but one voice, synced. You are a part of every smile, every caress of your fingertips on my skin is euphoric. I wake every morn, hoping to find you asleep next to me, my anchor holding me while life's storms silently rage. I'm drunk on the depth of you. We've shared the darkness along with the light, what it means to love and be in love. Whether in each other's presence or absence, we exist in the very essence of the other. Loving you is as easy as breathing. You've sown your seed within the most profound depths of me. Together, we choreographed a love story that beats in time with the divine. End poem.
Great read, Sapphire. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And, Bill, why don't we start with you? What did you think?
Well, I have to be honest, this is the first poem by Sapphire of seen or read, and it's wonderful. There's a great sensuality about it, and the love that it's expressed within the poem between the two people involved is amazing. The way it's the closing together, we choreographed a love story that beats time in time with the divine. That's an excellent closing. It's the wording there is great and wonderful flow.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Bill. And Jean, how about you?
Jean.
You're mutating.
Stop it. Cut it out now. I know.
Perhaps
I was on mute. As soon as I heard my name from Laurent, I just knew. Oh, can't wait. Anyway, I loved it. I really did. You know, I was trying to figure out where I would like to, like, pick up lines from. I mean, the whole thing was really wonderful. so many great stanzas. But I'm drunk on the depths of you. We've shared the darkness along with the light, what it means to love and be in love. Whether in each other's presence or absence, we exist in the very essence of the other. Loving you is as easy as breathing. You've sown your seed within the most profound depths of me. Together, we choreographed a love story that keeps in time with the divine. So wonderful. And, you know, I love the quote that she she wrote this one, which was a Pablo Neruda quote. I like problems. You know, I love you without knowing how or when or from where. I love you without problems or pride. I love you in this way because I do not know any other way of loving but this, in which there is no I or you. So intimate that your hand upon my chest is my hand. So intimate that when I fall asleep, your eyes close. I love that. You know, I do love that quote. So I think that she really did a fabulous job, you know, reflecting that prompt. And it's just a fabulous write. So excellent job, and thank you so much for the SoundCloud, Sapphire. It was much appreciated, and you did a fabulous job recording it. Thank you very much.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
Oh, I enjoyed this immensely. I see it's part of a list of poems that she has written with the love of my life in mind. And there's quite a few poems there. I think this is, well, it's very sweet, but it's also very, very passionate. We exist collectively in the realm of every heartbeat, in the color of the meeting of eyes, in the silence of twilight. We are one. We are but one voice synced. Especially like I'm drunk on the depth of you. And we share the darkness along with the light, what it means to love and be in love. Love has to be strong enough to survive the bad times and thrive on the good times. When she says loving you is as easy as breathing, it establishes the fact that the love is all-pervasive. It's in every breath that's drawn. It's in every word that's spoken. It's in everything that she sees. Together we choreograph a love story that beats in time with the divine, a reference to the spirituality of love, the spirituality of sex, for that matter, which I think is a holy moment. And stands, in my belief, it stands as the ultimate. Well, let me see. There was a song by Rod, what's his name there? Sexual Devotion, I think. Sexual Religion. This has, I think, just bits of that in there. It's a rite that examines, in part, the spirituality of love, and beautifully done.
Nice. I like that spirituality song because it does hit on that, but it also walks in that quiet note of sensuality without offering too much, but saying more than enough in the ease of voice offered. I like that in the silence of twilight, we are but one voice sings. You are part of every smile, every caress of your fingertips on my skin is euphoric. You are my anchor holding me while life's storms silently rage. And I like that single line to split the top and the bottom. I'm drunk on the depth of you. And then we share the darkness along with the light, what it means to love and be in love. The note to sharing right there. And then I did like that second last stanza, too. Loving you is as easy as breathing. You've sown your seed within the most profound depths of me. So she hits on that twice, the depth of being drunk on the depth of him, while the seed of that love, and well, maybe even the seed of literality, being placed deep within the depths of her as well. So, nicely done, Sapphire. Thank you very much.
Amen.
All right, Jane.
Oh, let's do it again. Oh, I'm not on mute. It's a miracle. Rex, what's the next one up for you? It's called Between OKs by Ben Hart. So whenever you are ready.
Oh, but Ben was right.
What's that?
It's going to be a long one.
Oh, yeah, it is a long one.
Between OKs by Ben Hart. The umbrella. Between OKs, I open your old umbrella in need of a gateway to freedom. Find the rain where you left it cascading down for one last dance with the daffodils, returning to this brickwork world, the loving arm of even the fool. And wind gave way to the still, drown a dandelion's dreams of ever flying across the hills that simply calling home wouldn't do justice. Wind had no place of her own, so she punished those who had somewhere to be, and the raindrops who finally found a home in my umbrella. I surrendered to falling all over again, just to remember the rain I once welcomed to prove you wrong, because you said ocean couldn't bleed the gardener. At a quarter past midnight, all the daffodils died. At divinity's birth, water went to war against the earth. Rivers rose, clouds stitched themselves into the sky. A blanket of bombers on Mother Ocean's orders let go, but never let die. A return to the earth, the seas once fell in love with, but now no longer know. The beautiful green gardener that allowed the rain to touch a heart made of stone, that at some point a strange revelation got over the cold, and for the sake of existence began resisting his useless resistance. The poets. Many outlive their vocation, but perhaps the poet's words just have it mean less each time it's told. Do not tell me the end. I already know. None of us are growing old. None of us are growing old. Though there's hope in our bones, none of us are growing old. Divine pretty things, worthy of outliving me, did not love me though, did not love me though. Don't tell me the end, don't fall for me, friend. There's hope in these bones, do not love me though. But it cannot stop you, please don't let it mean less, each time you told me so. And poem. And Laurent, wanted to start with you.
Yeah, this is a beautifully written write, as usual, and you read it quite well. The stands of wind had no place of her own, so she punished those who had somewhere to be. It's an absolutely memorable line, the implication that wind stands for a place for a person who is not homeless, but perhaps, but this doesn't have a place where she's going to fit in. And therefore, they punished those who had somewhere to be or who had places of their own, somewhere to go, a home to go to, or friends to see. Either way, the personifying the wind is beautifully done. And there are a number of personifications in this poem that I like. The wind gave way to the still, drown a dandelion's dreams of ever flying. Across the hills, simply calling home wouldn't do justice. Wind had no place of her own, she punished those who had somewhere to be. And the raindrops, who finally found a home in my umbrella. That was just magnificently worded. And the emotions are so strong in it. And the imagery is a real treat. It invites a variety of understandings, of a variety of what? I can't find the words tonight. Well, at any rate, I think you know what I mean. Once again, he's given us something that stands out. Lovely piece.
All right. Thank you, Rob. And Bill, how about you? What do you think?
Well, Bill dropped.
Oh, okay. Then I guess it's your turn.
That's what I figured. I thought this was just a wonderfully penned piece. Each vignette is well done. And, you know, I find it amazing that Ben, he puts these together. I'm sure it's not effortless when he's doing it, but he makes it look effortless. Everything just kind of flows so nicely. And this one, I noticed he had a lot of short lines that all pulled together into each of the vignettes, and I thought that was maybe he had short lines on a lot of this stuff. But this one kind of spoke to me a little bit more in that respect. I thought it was clever. You know, you start out with the umbrella, and then you go to, what, the pool, and then you go to the gardener. I mean, there's many, many facets to this, as it, in all of his works. And I think he did a fine job. Well, like how he ended it off with the poet. You know, none of us are growing old. None of us are growing old. The hope, though there's hope in our bones, none of us are growing old. Designed pretty things worthy of outliving me. Did not love me, though. Did not love me. Don't tell me the end. Don't fall from my friend. It was just an intriguing compilation of the vignettes, and I think you did a really nice job with it, and I enjoyed it very much. So thank you, Ben. Good job.
Thank you, Jean. Yeah, I like the opening stanza. It's sort of a between okays, I open your old umbrella in need of a gateway to freedom. Find the rain where you left it cascading down. But that imparts the need of getting out and breathing again, maybe being a held claustrophobic for a time. For one last dance with the daffodil. Daffodils offer up that note of spring, first birth. And that thought with the wind gave way to still, drowned a dandelion's dreams above a flying, a note to the, you take a dandelion, that those little tufts you blow off or the wind blows off, that's what gets seeded across the acres and miles and as they come to flying. So there's no dandelion daydreams right there, kind of hits on the idea of something lost in the moment. The raindrops and that thought to, because you said oceans couldn't bleed, that there's some heartache in there, maybe death. The gardener, I like that thought. A quarter past midnight, all the daffodils died at divinity's birth. Water went to war against the earth. Again, tears in that stanza. And the poet, the thought of growing old and not wanting to grow old, and the fact that in that growing old, we lose people along the way, which offers up those tears of sadness. Nicely touched on, Ben. Thank you very much. All right, Jean. Back to you.
Okay. So the next piece I'm going to put up is called Bluebird Striped Socks by Akiko Socks. So here we go. I'm going to give it a read. Bluebird Striped Socks by Akiko Socks. Bluebird Striped Socks. My classmates laugh at my descent. They look at me like a perched bluebird on an unstable stick. Removed from the tree. I may be cowardice, but I'm not scared of me. My socks are striped like bluebirds. I sit against the table after long study sessions. I ask myself all the time if I'm full of confessions. But my silly self tells me I'm a bluebird in a tree, always there looking cowardly. My socks are striped like bluebirds. Little old bluebird calls to me for warmth. But I'm on this lonely tree with no branches holding. And thanks.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And this, too, was from last Sunday's Buffalo Springfield show, and that was done to Song Bluebird by Buffalo Springfield. And Laurent, what do you think?
Well, I love the avatar's name, or the poet's name, Akiko Socks. Admirer of striped knee socks. That is nothing if not absolutely unique in poetry, perhaps. My classmates laugh at my descent. They look at me like a perched bluebird on an unstable stick removed from a tree. Well, here's a character who stands out. And not only that, he wears something that can be easily mocked, like socks, striped like bluebirds. I like the metaphor of the bluebird always there looking cowardly. Little old bluebird calls to me for a worm, but I'm on this lonely tree with no branches holding me. You know, it harkens right back to the first stanza it offers us this picture of a very perhaps ostracized person who has this little fetish, and he has taken that fetish and turned it into a very interesting poem.
I like that thought, ostracized. I hadn't quite come up on that, and this kind of hinted the idea of being an outsider because of the tree limb, maybe a little ungainly, hasn't quite grown into their body, so to speak. So the
well, yeah, it doesn't look like anybody else either. Either.
The what?
He doesn't look like anyone else either.
Correct.
He's the other.
Yes, the one outside. The one outside of what everyone else seems to be. Well said. And Jean, how about you?
Thought it was nicely tense. It was clever and it was well done. And I thought it was an intriguing take on the prompt. And as for being different, it says here that in her notes, there's love, pain, racism, and friendship. So I guess that is that being different than everyone else kind of feel in that piece itself. But I thought it was nicely done. It was a clever take on that prompt. And, great job. And thanks for sharing with us. I keep going with that. Yep. I think she's friends with Five Digits. Where? There's another person who has Five Digits as their name. And it makes me chuckle. They must be friends. I'm done with the comment. End comment.
Oh, okay. Well, we're still back to you.
Oh, it's coming back to me. They wonder you weren't doing anything exciting. Okie doke. wow. Okay, let's see where I want to go here. Okay, Laurent, I'm going to give you this next one. And this is called Museum Wandering by Dan DeSue. And here we go.
Museum Wandering. Songs of distant earth. Yes, history in my hand, echo beyond years, waves beneath the sand. It always was as light beyond the dark, vibrations, fire life, one note, a single spark. I breathe in air, a breath of now, a breath of then. All that was and all that is all to be again. End quote.
Great read, Laurel. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, what do you think?
Well, that was surprising. This is probably going to be a long poem. I think it was well done. I like the I breathe in air. I breathe of now. A breath of now. A breath of then. All that was and all that is all to be. To be again. I like that concept. It reminded me of another poem I know of. It kind of hit me right. But it was really well done, and I consider it really a brevity. I mean, just done in a wonderful fashion. Songs of distant earth, a history in my hand. Echo beyond you, waves beneath the sand. Clever. Clever work by Dan. And, thank you for sharing with us. Good luck in that contest.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
This is a brevity with an awful lot to say. Songs of distant earth as history in my hand speaks to reading history in a book. Echo beyond years, waves beneath the sand. The life on earth echoes in the place where it was born. And the echo of that life, the echo of what happened on this lonely globe, are like waves beneath the sand. They're, waves that are hidden, that we can't see, but they are there. And he says, it always was as light beyond the dark, vibrations, fire, life, one note, a single spark. I see vibrations as as everything that's happened has a vibration. Everything that's happened causes a spark. He says one note, a single spark. When he says, I breathe in air, a breath of now, a breath of then, again, we're reading about the past, and we're also looking at the present. And then when he addresses the future, he says, all that was and all that is all to be again. It speaks to the repetition that exists in history, where the same things occur over and over as each generation dies off and forgets what happened. The mistakes are repeated, history repeats itself, and all that is condensed so beautifully in Museum Wandering. And to title it Museum Wandering is perfect, because you're going to see the history of Earth, the progression of man as he grows, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. Well said. That's the path I was going to travel down. It says walk in that note of dipping into, as you said, a breath of now, a breath of then. The idea of breathing history itself. And that, like you said, it does paint to the thought, the back end is all to be again. That can hit on that note of repetition, or it can hit on that note of the rising note of beauty that you can only actually see within museums these days, because most of it has already traversed the edge of time because of all things passed through history. Not everything is relegated to the fact that it still stands. Some get torn down, some get bowled over, some just get bombed out of existence. So the idea of actually getting wandering through that museum means the idea you've got to actually live within that moment and take in that history itself. Kind of a nice philosophical piece as well. Thank you, Daniel. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
So Rexel's going to bring me back to you. And this is a piece called In the Quiet of the Green by Jack Thompson.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, where are you? Uh-huh. In the Quiet of the Green by Jack Tomkovic. In the quiet of the green, as we sit on the butterscotch deck, chocolate railing encircling, In the quiet of the green, as we sit on butterscotch deck, chocolate railing encircling, hawks scree overhead, gray squirrels sat scamper, and chase for black oil seeds we feed while cardinals and nuthatches scurry. All is right as we sit on the butterscotch deck. Fingers touching, eyes flirting, squeezing, feeling, listening to leaves dancing in the wind, hearing the first owl. Head finding shoulder, arm wrapping side, lips kissing, lids fluttering, breath hushing, chin nestling, in the quiet of a June evening green. And poem. All right, Jean, we'll start with you.
This is a nice piece. I said, butterscotch deck, I said, now that's an amazing way to describe it. And the chocolate rails. But I love the imagery of the squirrels and the hearing the owl, you know, all that that runs through. I mean, really, a lovely write in that respect. And it's nice to be able to sit and to enjoy that. So I think in that respect, it's a wonderful write. Wonderful imagery and great thought. So thank you, Jack. Appreciate it.
Nice seeing you. Thank you. And Laurent, how about you?
All is right as we sit on the butterscotch deck, fingers touching, eyes flirting, squeezing, healing. You know, there's a particular color of stain that is butterscotch. And my neighbor did his fence in that color. And it is absolutely butterscotch. Some of the best moments in life can be found when you're sitting on the deck, gazing at the nature around you and observing the world from your little perch. I mean, you're part of everything that's around you, but you're also separated in your own little world, one removed from what you observe there's a love in this poem the emotions are so strong. Head finding, shoulder, arm wrapping, side, lips kissing, lids fluttering, breath hushing, chin nestling in the quiet of a June evening green. And of course, you read his AN and it says, we are lucky to have 2 acres with big oaks shading our deck and 50 years together. It's that magic moment that takes advantage of an old love that is still very strong in the quiet of a June evening green. Beautifully lyrically written.
Absolutely. There is a nice note of peace and serenity in this because of the what he's got, the black oil seeds feeding to the birds, the cardinals and nuthatches, the scampering squirrels, and then that note of tenderness, just taking it all in, the draw to, the squeeze and the flirting, listening to the leaves, then the head finds shoulder, the nice quiet kiss, and then the breath hushing in the moment because everything is offers up that nice touch of quiet, peaceful end to a wonderful day. And I like that butterscotch deck thought too. It hits me with the idea of wood shaded in that golden maple color, which is nice, light, and refreshing instead of the heavy dark, which most decks are usually done in, which also burn the feet if you're not careful. So, nicely done, Jack. Thank you very much. All right, Jane, we're back with you, Jane.
Okay, the next piece I'm going to put up is called Fuck It by Hope Soul. She said it can't work. I say it all the time. So I can't. Okay, this is Fuck It. Quick Sandy eats up who's in it, much like this bed that houses my body solo. A lot like depression, swallows too, just like whores and heavy set couples at the all-you-can-eat buffet. Choke on the spit, chicken legs, for that guy you met in the bar last night, before last call. I forgot what this poem was supposed to be about. Started typing away, trying to curb the want for a cigarette. Smoke to feed the old man who lives in my lungs. Bottle of whiskey whispers at me, just like before, but it's quieter now, almost like a whistle. I think it's flirting with me. Maybe wants to crawl in between my sheets, touch my lips, make these cheeks hot and red. I don't think I can compete with him, though. I don't know. I'll let them all win. The quicksand, depression, cigarettes, the whores, rums, bourbon, that old man, too. Screw it. And so on.
Great read, Gene. Thank you very much. All right, Laurent, what do you think about this?
I think that you've got to give me just a moment to read it because I was working on my comment in the last part.
Ah, okay. I guess I get to dip in. All right, let me see.
Yeah.
Well, that's it on the idea of depression, also addiction because of the thought of cigarettes and giving those up, but having still had that need, kind of like the novelist who had given up cigarettes but always promises himself, once he's finished that novel, he has one cigarette in celebration. Because she hits on that down the back end of screw it by hitting on the cigarettes, the rum, the bourbon. And that old man, too, kind of paints that idea because she hit on that note in the first stanza. A lot like depression, it swallows, too, just like whores and heavy-set couples at the all-you-can-eat buffets, choke on the spit, chicken legs, or that guy you met in the bar last night before last call. That is never a good promissory note. Last calls are always usually end up, they always end up in disaster because most times you wake up the next thing, what the hell did I get into last night? And then you look over on the other side, oh, shit, I got up on the wrong side of the bed this morning and he don't belong there or she don't belong there, so to speak. And that note, too, I forgot what this poem was supposed to be about. Kind of a nice, humorous interlude into the back end of this. Smoke to feed the old man who lives in my lungs. The bottle of whiskey whispers at me just like before. It's quieter now, almost like a whistle. I think it's flirting with me. That need, that note of everything calling in the moment because it still yanks. It still tugs at the inner sense of self and those things you used to enjoy so much, but do not indulge in so much anymore. But yet, that draw is heavy. It sits there. It bites at you, especially when the moments get tense, or in this case, depression creeps in a little deeper. Jean, what about you?
You know, I think it was a great write. I really do. It was very down to earth, and I like that about Hope's writing in general. I have to say, the second half of it really is where I got most of the meat from. You know, I forgot what this poem was supposed to be about. Yeah, I like that transitional space there. You know, that way it could turn into something a little different. Started typing away, trying to curb the want for a cigarette. You know, I get it. I get that one. A bottle of whiskey. But, you know, when she speaks of a depression down here in addiction, you know, sadness, that depression opens you up to all that vulnerability for all the other things, you know, for that want of a cigarette, that want of a drink, that want of companionship. I mean, it just does a lot to a person. And I think that, that's what I grabbed out of this. I think she has there's a lot of things going on in here, you know, and a bottle of whiskey. Oh, here it is. A bottle of whiskey whispers at me, just like before, but it's quieter now, almost like a whistle. I think it's flirting with me. Maybe it wants to crawl in between my sheets, touch my lips, make these cheeks hot and red. I don't think it can compete with him, though. You know, so to me, that triggers me to believe there is a him that is missing in this, which is causing her to feel the sadness and the depression because it's an empty space. And she's, again, and in the poem, it's looking for a way to fill that empty space, that void. So great work, Hope, and I really enjoyed the piece. Well done.
Oh, absolutely. I forgot. It has that tonal note of a little Bukowski in between, too. So I like that as well. Laurent, how about you?
Well, I'm not going to try and till the acreage that you so skillfully plowed yourself. And I'm not going to quote the stanza that Jean just quoted, which I was going to, but I'll simply add, when you title a poem bucket, you had better find a resolution to that in the poem somewhere. And that's found in the last part of the final stanza. Maybe I'll let them all win. The quicksand, depression, cigarettes, the whores, rum, bourbon, the old man too. Screw it. And I just found that so on point. The rhythm builds towards that ending and then drops those last two words, which brings you right back to the top title. Really well done.
Excellent. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
Okay, Marat, I'm coming to you with your piece. And this is called Dreaming Woodland by Marat. There you
go. Dreaming Woodlands. Morning applies its sunrise blush, painting the tallest of us in the chromatic hues of dawn. Light slowly creeps down our greening lengths, dusting us in dewy diamonds. Fir preens, maple dances, oak adds its annular ring as we so softly chant. We are breath, all to purpose, immortal lineage bred to service, wood to build and burn for heat, sap to stirrup, our year complete. Lush in summer, bare in winter, the woodsman performs his daily role. Deadfall collected, no branch rejected. Twig and stick, he amasses the whole. Twilight dims our bowers deep, as bit by bit bright color fades. Painted in purple, matted black, dreaming woodlands of all shades. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, let's start with you.
I like this poem. I thought it was very well penned, and I really enjoyed the personifications in the piece. I also enjoyed the first two stanzas myself, that they were a great lead into the whole. You know, morning applies its sunrise flush, painting the tallest of us in chromatic keys, dawn. I love that. I think that's a wonderful line. Oh, stanza. That's a good one. Light slowly creeps down our greening length, dusting us in dewy diamonds. I think that it's actually the three stanzas. You know, just fur greens, maple dances, angular rain, as we so softly stand. I think that that's just a lovely description throughout as to what's going on, you know, in this picture you paint. So I think that it's really well done. And, you know, I went on throughout the whole poem. I'm not going to do that here on air. But, you know, trees are so important for so many things in life. You know, and you reflected in the next two things. You know, we are breath, hope, purpose. You know, I mean, we keep chopping them down, but that's really what it is. It's all about, they give us oxygen. And we take them for everything else under the sun. But I think that you worded this softly, and I thought it was beautiful. So nice work, and thanks for sharing with us.
Thank you, Jim.
Oh, when I opened this up, I saw that first line. Oh, damn, I like that. And then you read it, and I took a second look, because I thought it read, morning apples, it's sunrise blush, and then you read morning applies. But even that, it speaks to its nice tone. But I thought if you'd gone with apples, that would have offered up something different in the moment, really lush, because this is all about the personification of that which most people take for granted. As Jean says, trees, they give us life. They take CO2, convert it to oxygen, and that is fed across the planet in anything and everything, as well as the thought that if you are taking care of your woodlands, you do clean out the detritus. You use it to heat your homes. You use it to as mulch for your beddings to keep the water in, so you don't have to apply that much more water than you need to. So there's a whole lot in here that offers up what you get from the woodlands, and the thought of woodlands dreaming themselves is a nice quiet tone to, like, hey, if a tree falls in the woods and nobody's there, does it still make a sound? Of course it does.
Yes, it does. Gravity works. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Jane, we're coming back to you.
Okay. Rex, I'm going to ask you to read this next one. This is Bill's piece. Shame he wasn't. This is called See You on the Other Side by Bill Borton. Whenever you're ready.
All right. Did I miss it? Ah, there it is. Okay. See You on the Other Side by Bill Borton. Hear these words on a whisper's breath, a silent song sang by the harbinger of death. Into the darkness, my journey must continue. How else can you become the demon that's within you? Can you hear his chorus of pain? Silence screams within the refrain, broken dreams with each crescendo, empty hope may be the end though. Soon flame will lick the skin, revealing the terror that's within. That's not the only sight surprise, but it all unfolds before your eyes. Are you ready for this horror? This evil lurks round every corner. Terror lives where evil lies, hidden behind the wreath of dark eyes, whisked away by the angels of death, leaving you hanging on every last breath. Freedom lay within the flames of hell. Unleash the rage you know so well. There are those that know this well, buried within their personal hell, screaming songs for them to continue, awaiting someone with the strength to break through. Somewhere beneath all the pain, there some good must remain, buried beneath the sea of tears, guarded by something not seen for years, surrounded by a wall of heartbreak fears. So armor up and prepare for battle.
are you stronger than their shadows? See you on the other side. And pump. And The Rock, pick it with you first.
Yeah, I'm admiring this this darkness, which would have worked really well in for Selena's show. This is really well written. The and you hear his chorus of pain, silent screams within the refrain, broken dreams with each crescendo, empty hope may be the end though, and that's a nice way of ending that line. Not normally do you see that, but it was very, very well done. And then to follow it with, soon the flame will lick the skin, revealing the terror that's within. And now we're going to almost archetypal fears, fears that are within all humans, I think. And the idea that after you die, you're going to be, we'll see you on the other side. And how else can you become the demon that's within you? It's kind of a scary thought. I mean, you know, it's something that you don't, may not even be aware of that's in you is now going to condemn you to a place where you are going to burn. That's, that's evil, I guess. At any rate, Bill did a great job of this. I would have enjoyed hearing him read it, but Rex, as normal, you did a fine job. Well done,
Bill. All right. Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
Yeah, I thought this was a well-penned piece by Bill, a wonderful dark piece. I like that. I really liked how he pulled it all together. That's right. I have to say that I pulled these lines. Her lives were evil lies. She's behind Reaper's dark eyes, whisked away by the angels of death, leaving you hanging with every last breath. Freedom may lay within the flames of hell, unleash the rage you know so well. There are those that know this well, buried within their personal hell, screaming songs that for them continue, awaiting someone with the strength to break through. I think this is one portion of it. The whole thing is really well done and nicely put together. So great job, Bill, and thanks for sharing with us. I'm sorry you didn't get to stay and read it yourself. But maybe next time. It was fun. So, great piece.
Thank you, Jean. I like that. I did like that. How else can you become the demon that's within you? It does kind of paint a grim image until you get full into it. I get the idea that in order to fight evil, you have to become slightly part of that evil so you can walk on that level. But it also, on the back end, it offers up something else as a note of truth. So armor up and prepare for battle. The idea armor up, take the armor of God, armor and shield of God, and prepare for your battle with the devil because you are needed and see you on the other side. It is not that note to hell. It's the idea of cleaning up the idea of hell, but you need to battle hell in order to get to the other side, which offers up that note of some heavenly arena to which you might then dwell within. I like that thought. Thank you, Bill.
Yes.
Well, I don't know.
Come on, Jean. Good to see you.
I was trying to see if I could find a short one, but I don't have one. Everything is pretty long. So, we have 6 minutes. What do you think? You think we can do something in 6 minutes?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. We'll try it. Okay. Here we go. Rex, I'm going to ask you to read this one. And this is a piece by Nuno. So, here we go. Whenever you're ready. Okay.
Who did you ask?
Rex.
You. Oh, me?
Rex.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Sorry if I was brusque by that's kind of prescient there. Sorry if I was brusque by Nuno Cardoso. When I was around 11 years old, my best friend made new friends and died. It was an accidental explosion,
he, instead of going to class, went out drinking and smoking, and who knows what else with his new friends that got him where he got to, all over the fucking place. Little did I know of his wisdom that he had at the time. I knew that he suffered at the time. I knew. What a great friend that I was. Maybe I could have prevented all this. His mother didn't have money, so I went on the streets to ask for money, and I went to school to ask for money. I added a little by little for the funeral. I gave a few bucks. I managed to get €9. His death was the top of the conversation, and when I heard of his death at school, the fear of guilt rose up in me, and I said, he got what he deserved. The same day I arrived home and cried, knowing that what I said was a lie. And poem. Jean, what do you think?
I'm not ready. That's what I think.
Laurent, how about you? Laurent, you there?
Okay, well, Laurent dropped. No.
Oh. I guess it is just me and you then, huh?
Damn, I'm not ready.
Kids are kids. Sometimes those lingering thoughts, they kind of they pace themselves to the soul, and that you get to carry that with you through life, even though you really didn't mean it in the moment because you're 11 years old and you're a little pissed off the fact that your best friend just made new friends and split me a life, so to speak. That offers up the idea of being angry in the moment, but it does paint the picture of how we react in the moment without clear thought, and the idea on the back end, he got what he deserved, but going home and crying, knowing that you just offered up something so profoundly wrong within that lie, and yet you did go out and try to offer up a bit of solace by trying to get money, but €9, that doesn't speak too well about the people in the arena either, so it kind of paints the idea of we don't pay enough attention to those within our own arena, and when we ignore them, we lose sight of them in the moment, and then they're gone. And by the time we get to the point of actually trying to help, it's a little bit too late in the moment. And that kind of bites painfully, as well as the loss of the friend itself. I like this, Nuno. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Did I give you enough time?
Yeah, because I had to read it. I was doing something else, triggering a lot. And you were getting to it, but I think that this is a very sad piece, from what I see. You know, it appears to be a true story. That's what I would say, for real. And it's very, very painful, and it has to be extremely painful because there's a guilt that runs through this piece. You know. Because he feels that he could have prevented it from happening. And that's not always true, because I believe that what happened, we're meant sometimes for these kind of crazy things to happen. I do believe that. And, sometimes no matter what you do, you couldn't have changed it. So, sadly, you could have been part of it, and then that could have been worse in some way. But I think it was just simply accepted, and I think Nuno did a fine job with it. And I hope it was cathartic for him to get it out and to write it down, because I think that really, that's the way it feels to me, that it needed to be expressed and it needed to be put on paper and purged a bit. So with that respect, wonderful job, Nuno, and thank you for sharing with us. I appreciate it as always. And Rex, it was a great show tonight.
Yes.
Thank you for co-hosting with me. I think we only have like 5 carryovers. And I apologize to anyone who is a carryover, but we were making tracks. We really were. So, I think we put a dent in there, a good dent in the list of calling. And thank you, Bill, for calling in. And thank you, Victoria, for calling in. And thank you, Cam, for calling in. And thank you, Laurent, for calling in. And am I missing somebody? Thank you, Rex, for calling in. Thank you, me, for calling in. That's it, right? Yeah, that's it. I appreciate everybody who called in and spent some time with us. And, you know, hope we'll do it again soon. Meantime, Rex, what do you have on Sunday?
Poets of the Fall is for Sunday.
Oh, Poets of the Fall. That's right. I forgot. See how silly I am, right? That should be a good show. I don't think I'm going to like that. And in fact, I'm pretty darn sure I will. Anyway, thank you so much for hanging with me tonight, Rex, as always. And you have a great night and a good weekend. And I got to run because I think I have to do an audio for Dex's show, which is coming up next. Everybody, Dex's show. New show.
All right, guys. Have a good evening.
Thank you, Rex. I appreciate you. Take care.
Good night.
Good night.